Hi, I'm Ed Slott.
And I'm Jeff Levine.
And we're two guys who just love to talk about retirement and taxes.
Look, our mission is simple, to educate you, the saver, so that you can make better decisions, because better decisions, on the whole, lead to better outcomes.
And here's how we're going to do that. Each week, Jeff and I will debate the pros and the cons of a particular retirement strategy or topic, with the goal of helping you keep more of your hard-earned money.
Yeah, but we won't know which side of the debate we're taking until we flip a coin. Winner of the coin flip gets to pick which side of the debate they want to argue.
And both of us will have to argue in favor of our respective positions, whether we agree with them or not.
At the end of each debate, there's going to be one clear winner. You, a more informed saver who can hopefully apply the merits of each side of the debate to your own personal situation to decide what's best for you and your family.
So here we go. Welcome to the Great Retirement Debate.
Welcome back to the Great Retirement Debate. Ed, I am fired up for our next episode and ready to argue. So tell me, Ed, what are we arguing about?
Well, here's an interesting point. Should I downsize my home in retirement? I get that question a lot from clients, especially older ones like me. And I have to remind our listeners, Jeff and I have a generational divide, so our point of view could be skewed towards that age. Jeff's about 30 years younger than me, so I may have a different point on that. As usual, we'll flip a coin to see which side of the debate we'll come out on. You ready?
I will say, Ed, we're finally getting to the point, though, where we have a about the same amount of hair between the two of us.
Yeah, that's why we do audio podcasts.
That's all right. You were ahead. You know, it was kind of a weird race here. You know, first I had more hair, then you had more hair, and now we're tied. So
yeah, right.
All right. Well, that's an interesting one. Ed, your topic, I'm going to call it. I'm going to say tails.
All right.
Tails. I finally win one. You know what, Ed? My natural inclination would be to argue in favor of downsizing, but I'm going to go the other way. And I'll say I'm going to go the other way because of a particular interaction with a client of mine. And that is, I'm going to argue in favor of not downsizing. And my beginning point that I'd love to make, Ed, just to kick it off, is when I envision myself, you know, one of the things that I can share now is recently I've built a house that is meant to be a forever home. And it's a larger house. You know, there's plenty of room for our family now, but also plenty of room for our family as our family grows. I'm lucky enough to have three healthy boys. God willing, one day they all grow up. I mean, the oldest right now is only 8, so it's many years from now, but God willing, they all grow up. They find, you know, people that they love to spend their lives with. And maybe at least one or two of them, maybe all of them end up, you know, bringing home grandchildren one day. I'd love for this place to be the place where we can all gather each and every year for those important holidays, continue family traditions, et cetera. And I had a client who did this in retirement. He actually upsized because of that. He wanted to have a place for his family to come spend in retirement. He said it was the best decision that he's ever made. And I look at all the memories that he's created in that house with his family, and I just want the same for myself and my family.
I can see that. But again, as a grandparent and say 30 years your senior, you know, I have to say
that one more time. I just like to hear that.
Yeah, I want people to know where I'm coming from. It used to be the American dream was to own your own home. Now it's getting the kids out of it. I think if you have a large home, now you talked about your three boys bringing everybody home. What if they're still living there? You know, it's very common now in today's economy, people coming back in. I like the idea of downsizing just to, simplify my life, get rid of, otherwise my kids will end up cleaning up the mess, all these little things. You know, I had this when my mom died, we're going through all this stuff. Now, she did downsize after my father passed away, but my father was more in your school. He loved having the house and everybody came over the house. But after he passed, so it may be what situation you're in. As a single person, you might be better off downsizing because you don't have to worry about if you have a home, cutting the lawn and doing all these chores around the house and just having making life simple, less bills to pay and less things to take care of. Same thing. Well, I always say same thing with your investments. People always ask me about, you know, having all these IRAs. I have 50 IRAs. You only need one IRA, you know. So sometimes it just makes life simpler if you downsize. Plus, you can get your money out of the house at the top of a market and even rent. You might not even have to buy something.
Well, you know, those are interesting points, Ed. And I think one of the things that I would, you know, that kind of hits me as you talk through that is the idea of simplifying life as you get older. And I understand that. And in fact, that's probably the most common argument I hear from folks is, I don't want to take care of this anymore. It's too much house for me. I've got to worry about this breaking and that breaking. But I think one of the other things that's important to realize too is that as you get older, you know, there is some benefit to routine, particularly for those who begin to lose, you know, cognitive abilities, et cetera. There's a lot of evidence that would show that, you know, maintaining a consistent routine can help improve quality of life. You know, think about going from one place to another and then all of a sudden not remembering, you know, where the bathroom is or where you store, you know, the drawer that you have your brush in for the last 40 years. It's kind of, you know, it's automatic for a lot of people at some point. And then to have to pick up and move into a new environment can be challenging. And all the gains that are made, let's say, from not having to pay the, you know, the lawn bill. Well, so much of that today can be automated with auto payments and so forth, or with a good power of attorney being able to take care of that for you. But those little things and the comfort of being in a place that you have known for so long is also one that I would, would point out.
And you can be comfortable. Those are all good points. And absolutely, health is a big is the big factor in all of this. Do you have the wherewithal? It depends. Maybe you're taking care of a spouse, or maybe, as I said, a spouse has died and you're alone. You might like to be in more of a community in a smaller apartment or condo complex where there are people around and things are taken care of. So it's I think health is a big thing, and lifestyle. Maybe you want to travel more and you don't have to worry about locking up the house every time you go away. You just, you know, if you're in an apartment or a condo or co-op or something, you lock the door and you're on your way. You don't have to worry about any of these things. So again, I like the idea, not me personally, but the idea of simplicity and not having to worry about other things. As you get older, people don't want to worry about a lot of other things. You know, there's something to be said for a nice, big, comfortable house, but you can have those same comforts in a smaller home or an apartment or a condo or something like that. And sometimes in some of these things, as you've seen, I mean, they're all over the country. I was going to say Florida, but they're all over. You have amenities. You have your own small unit, but you have access to all kinds of amenities and activities and other people. And that's really important if you're alone.
Now, I got another one for you, Ed. I'm going to have to go to the financial side of this because I have a feeling arguing on the practical side is going to be a losing battle for me. So I'm going to go to the financial side of this for a moment and say, if you have, purchased a house that has gone up significantly in value, there is under current tax law an exemption for a certain amount of gain. If you are a single individual, you have up to $250,000 of gain that can be tax-free. If you are married and file a joint return, you can have up to $500,000. But as home prices continue to increase, and we've seen substantial increases in recent years, and as we start off with larger amounts, it takes a smaller percentage gain to exceed those $250,000 and $500,000 thresholds. And if you are going to go and sell your house and your gain exceeds those excludable amounts, that gain is actually taxable to you, even though you're not able to like depreciate unless you're taking a home office deduction, but you're not generally able to like depreciate your own personal home. And if you lose money on your house, you don't get to take a loss. You do have to pay taxes, income tax, that's capital gains tax, plus the 3.8% surtax if your income exceeds certain amounts on the gain from the sale of your house. But if you hold on to that house and you enjoy it throughout your lifetime. When you pass away, your heirs will be able to get that house with what they refer to as a step up in basis, meaning right. You could have bought your house for $500,000, 40 years ago. Now it's worth $2.5 million. You have $2 million of gain, and that entire $2 million can escape taxation forever as long as you hold on to it until you die.
Well, that's true. And I thought about that for myself. Do I want to sell the house or maybe just hold on to death and get the step up in basis? My heirs won't have to pay any tax on it. But that's more about them than me. It's about my lifestyle. And maybe I don't want to keep a whole house like that. And first of all, there's no guarantee the market. Well, I shouldn't say there's no guarantee. Yes, there is no guarantee the market will always go up, even though traditionally for like our lives, 50 years. I mean, I think of it, my father bought the house my mother sold for $16,000. She sold it, only a few decades later for $500,000. It's crazy. Same house. So there is that. The reason I was thinking of maybe downsizing is to leave other people of all the record keeping. I was thinking of all the improvements. You talk about the gain, but the longer you're in a house, the more likely it is you put tens, if not hundreds of thousands into it. I mean, if you're in a house 30, 40, 50 years, there's certain things.
Yep. New heater.
It wouldn't be standing if you didn't put tens of thousands of dollars into it. So maybe this is the time to, it won't be tax. Your issue won't be as much as you think. First of all, a married couple, if you're thinking while you're married, you do get the $500,000. It's double. So that may cover a lot of the gain. Remember, the $500,000 is not off the selling price, the gain. And the gain is the selling price less your original cost plus all of those improvements. Now, true, what Jeff said, you don't need to know any of that if you hold it till death. Everybody, the beneficiaries get the step up in basis. But then that's, like I said, about the beneficiaries making it easier for them and a little easier for you maybe because you don't want to change anything. So you keep piling on your junk in the house for somebody else to take away. And at some point, I think I'd like to just simplify and, get a smaller place. And maybe there might be some tax to pay, but it all depends on how much you put into the house. But then it's a lot simpler. You don't have to worry about all these things. And a lot of things I said before about, especially if a spouse has died or you don't have a spouse and you just want to be active with people there. These places, hey, the Villages in Florida, these people love that stuff.
Yeah, they love a lot of things, Ed. I mean, I'm sure you've seen the reports that it is the, go ahead and Google the Villages, folks, if you don't know what I'm talking about.
All what Jeff is talking about is that they love life.
Yeah, they love love. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, that's it's an interesting place. I would also say, Ed, one other thing on the financial side of this is that, most people, when you think about retirement, they've got a tremendous amount of assets, or at least a lot of people who are probably listening to this type of podcast have a significant portion of their assets tied up in financial assets, things like stocks, bonds, mutual funds, ETFs, et cetera. And if you sell your house and you walk away with a boatload of cash, what are you going to do? You're probably going to go and invest it in stocks, bonds, mutual funds, ETFs. Your house, while you own it, is effectively a non-correlated asset with the market, with stocks and bonds. In other words, it's a diversifier to your portfolio. And while someone listening may say, yeah, but I can't spend my kitchen. Well, you can in a way, right? There are home equity loans. There are reverse mortgages, right, which are much, much more cost efficient and much more regulated than they were in previous years. Not advocating for it today, maybe on a future podcast, I'll have to. But there are all these things that come up from time to time. And ultimately, that is, your house is an asset. There is a way to access the value in your house while you are still there. And even if the stock market is down, the real estate market, your house may still be valuable enough that you can take a loan from that of substantial amounts. And in fact, sometimes you may even want to access the money in your house as a loan to avoid selling when the stock market is down, to give it time to recover before you sell those financial assets.
Right. That is a good financial argument that you can tap the funds, but you still have to deal with maintaining the home. And I know some people tell me they keep the home because they want to leave it to their kids. This is not a statistic. It's just something somebody said, but
something you made up, but it sounds good for the podcast.
Somebody else made up. He was talking about reverse mortgages. That's what reminded me when you said that. He said, and it's probably some truth to it, 99% of homeowners, parents, think their kids want the house when they die. 99% of kids don't want the house. They want the money.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I mean, forget about that. What if you differ in opinion, right? I mean, that's, that is one that, you'll notice that I definitely didn't use that as an argument that it's what the kids want.
What do you mean, differ in opinion with the two spouses?
Or the two kids, right? Like,
two kids. But I, when you said that, I was thinking of my parents. They did differ in opinions. My father wanted to stay in the house. He was just like your first argument. This is my palace. This is where everybody comes. I'm not moving, but he died early. And it didn't take a year or two. My mother said, I'm out of here. I'm doing what I always wanted to do, get my little apartment. She sold the house and she didn't even buy anything else. She just rented and it worked out great. The money lasted up for the rest of her life.
Sounds like a win. Ed, I don't know. It's a good discussion. Have I convinced you? Are you rethinking selling your house now, or do you still think you'll downsize? I think that may be the ultimate judge of how this debate went.
Would like to downsize because I'd like to do it on my terms. See what goes, and take care of everything so I don't leave other people a problem. But there's another side to that. Leave them the problem.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to do.
Step up in basis. They can hire accountants and attorneys. They'll have plenty more money.
Yeah, I've got probably 30, 40 years before I have to make that decision, but that's where I'm leaning, at least for right now.
All right.
There we go. Well, another fun discussion, Ed, and, certainly two sides to this coin as there are with most everything in life. But
this is very practical. This is a lot of people are grappling with this now.
Yeah. But our listeners, their life and their retirement decisions are too important to leave up to that coin flip. So, that's why the one thing, Ed, you and I always agree on is making sure that people are talking with a knowledgeable financial advisor or tax professional when it comes to any sort of big decision. This way they can weigh the pros and the cons of different options against their specific set of goals and objectives. As a reminder, if you'd like to continue the discussion with Ed and I, we love to hear from you. We always look forward to seeing what's coming through in our inboxes or on Twitter. You can reach out to Ed on Twitter using the handle The Slot Report. That's with two T's, The Slot, S-L-O-T-T Report. Or you can reach out to me using the handle at CPA Planner. Once again, that's at CPA Planner. And we would love to hear from you. Let us know what you thought. You think you're going to downsize? You're going to stay in your current home? Why? And if you have a topic for us for a future episode, we'd love to know. Ed?
Well, I think it's important we hit good topics, good points on this. But one of the big points I just want to reiterate, the point you made, you have to really have some good records. I mean, you have to know what you paid. You talked about the gain. You have to know what you paid and a lifetime's worth, could be decades worth of improvements. Sometimes people don't keep records. This is one area where you've got to keep these records forever as long as you own that house, because everything you can prove will increase your basis and may get you to the point that you can sell with that $500,000 exclusion and have no tax. Anyway, something to think about, and we'll see you next time on the Great Retirement Debate.
Jeffrey Levine is Chief Planning Officer for Buckingham Wealth Partners. This podcast is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be construed as specific investment, accounting, legal, or tax advice. Certain information mentioned may be based on third-party information which may become outdated or otherwise superseded without notice. Third-party information is deemed to be reliable, but its accuracy and completeness cannot be guaranteed. The topic discussed in corresponding arguments are those of the speakers and may not accurately reflect those of Buckingham Wealth Partners.